Some scars are carved into our bones, a part of who we are, shaping what we become.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you reviews over the internet's favorite, most recommended books. Anything you've seen on BookTok, we've probably read it, and we'll give you an honest look at whether or not it's worth fitting into your busy schedule. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are doing a little bit of Chinese mythology retelling. We have Daughter of the Moon Goddess. It was pretty popular a couple months back now, but I still see the book in like every popular book section. It has a really beautiful cover if you're looking for it. But it is the retelling of a Chinese myth you may not be familiar with, because I ended up reading up about it afterwards, but of Chang'e, the moon goddess. Also, sorry, we're probably going to butcher all the Chinese names in this book. I'm so sorry. but Chang'e, the moon goddess, steals this elixir of immortality and some myths from her husband, a famous archer who earns it, and ends up becoming immortal and flying to the moon. Well, this story is about if she had been like kind of secretly pregnant, her daughter, and her daughter's quest to earn back her mother's freedom from the moon, where she has been imprisoned by the celestial emperor and empress in this kind of deity world above the mortal world, like the stars, essentially. There's a lot going on. anyway, it's a bunch of like battling monsters and very Odyssey-esque quests to earn her mother's freedom while finding herself.
Of course. Well, do you guys have reviews?
Yeah, I have a review. It took me a while to find some good reviews, but I found one, and it's a 3-star review. And I noticed a trend in the 3 stars, and this follows that trend. It says, okay, but a slight disappointment after seeing that gorgeous cover, RIP.
Yeah, so many of the negative reviews mention how beautiful the cover is. I read this book several years ago, and I think I gave it like my most like beautiful cover award in our like 2022-2023 podcast.
Oh, I don't remember that.
It's gorgeous.
I have a 3-star also. It says, good, the characters were kind of bland though. Too much self-help book type talk to feel like real people. This book read like a friggin' fortune cookie. That's my addition to that. There was a lot of flowery...
Well, it's Chinese fables.
I know. It did a lot of, you know, become who you are, find your destiny. Family is awesome. I don't know.
I will say, I think I'm the only one on this podcast that can say this. I actually, for fun, watch like K-dramas and Korean like TV shows. And I've watched
Chinese you're the only TV one. Shows.
Yeah. So I enjoy them because I think they're like cutesy and like very different from US based. And this reminded me like almost exactly of some of those K-dramas and TV shows based in like fantasy worlds. And yeah, so it's very much taking the fables plus the Korean and Chinese TV genre into the book.
Okay, well, I have so many reviews today. So back on my bullshit.
Love it.
It took me a while to find some good ones, and then I kept finding more and more good ones. So they're all 1-star. The first, a great premise and beautiful myth background does not make up for bad writing, pacing, characterization, plot, dialogue, and everything else that should make up a novel. I was like, damn, that is brutal. This book made me very angry. It was good 1 second and suddenly never mind. It was bad. Yeah. It's like, I guess. Speaking of the cover, I have begun to understand the saying, never judge a book by its cover. Catherine, this one's for you. Ah, yes. My old nemesis, the love triangle.
That is for Catherine. Yeah. I thought of you as I was reading it. I was like, ooh, this is a good one for Catherine.
And last one. It wasn't all bad, but I just couldn't bring myself to give it 2 stars. The good, I got to try out 3.5 reading speed on Audible to get through it. Another one for Catherine. How do you even...
Whew. Especially with all the little Chinese words that we don't know.
Yeah,
that would be a lot.
Okay. Well, this book has really high reviews, actually. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.1 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.5 out of 5. What did you guys think?
So I gave it a weak 4 stars. And the whole star knockoff is because of the love triangle. But I enjoyed the main character. I liked the flowery language and story, actually, because I think it's very unique to the region and very unique to like Chinese fables and stuff like that. And I really enjoy learning more about Chinese mythology. And I thought it was a very good YA book. And I try to give YA books a little more grace just because they're not meant for adults. They're meant for young adults. And I would have loved to read this book when I was like younger. Like it gave me like good, like sentimental vibes.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree. I gave it 3 stars. I think in my original, it's been a while since I've read this book, but in my original Goodreads review, I think I put like, this book is so close to being great, but there's just like some big whiffs, I think, on like some of the major themes. Like I felt like the characters stayed really flat throughout the book. The romance to me didn't really sizzle at all. I loved the sort of folklore world building aspect of it. That's really what I read it for. And like, I thought the world was beautiful and interesting and really well built out. But I also just felt like it eventually got really repetitive, and some of like the major battles that happened, I felt like just kind of got resolved. Like things just worked out without any real like struggle or like meaningful opposition. So ultimately I was just kind of like, I just think it's kind of an okay book. I think it has strengths, but I don't really think it's, you know, more than 3 stars for me.
So I'm in agreement with Casey. This was a 3-star for me, despite being fantasy. At the beginning of the book, I was like beating myself over the head with my Kindle to make myself read it. I was really bored at the beginning. I'm sorry. It did get better. It did. It got more action-y. I just felt like at the beginning, it was like, oh, this plot. Never mind. This plot. Never mind. Here's a different like, she kept doing so many things. I was like, this is too many things. I don't know what's happening and I'm not invested because these were too many things. And it did. It got much, much better. It's a very long book. And while it was like cute, it was just average for me. So 3 stars.
Totally fair.
Yeah. Okay. So now to our non-spoiler discussion. Did you guys think the book was more plot or character driven?
I think it's more plot because it's like a journey-based story where her whole goal is to get her mother out of prison and to survive in a world that's her enemy. So she doesn't have a ton of character growth besides like growing her powers. She kind of stays pretty true to herself the entire book. But she's following like one main mission and one main goal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I felt like her end goal is always to free her mom. And so the plot revolves around that goal. But she's not really in control of most of that. Those are kind of things that just happen.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said it. It's just one big, long, epic odyssey kind of thing where she's trying to get to an end goal with all these little side quests. So But there is a good amount of character development. It's just not the central point.
Okay. So have you / would you read other books by the author? I think the sequel to this book came out fairly recently.
I think that's why it was popular again. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was the author's debut novel.
Yes. However, where it left off, I don't think I have a reason to pick up the second one. I don't know. Like, it was cute, but I just have other books I'd rather read first. So.
Yeah, the book does not end on a cliffhanger, per se. It kind of wraps it up nicely. The only thing it leaves in the air is kind of a spoiler, so I'm not going to say what it leaves in the air, but I wasn't invested in that part of the book.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just random aside, I'm looking at the author's, her, like, author page on Google, and every single one of her books has a just devastatingly beautiful cover.
Yeah, the second one I saw the cover and it's amazing.
Yeah, they are truly gorgeous.
I mean, good shelf trophies if you finish them.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I didn't even enjoy the book that much and I want to buy it just because it's just so beautiful.
It's a gorgeous cover.
Okay, so how was the pacing of the book? We've mentioned this a little bit already, but it's a book with, like, a lot of different sections. You follow the main character actually over the course of years through, like, most of her, like, kind of childhood and then into her early adulthood. So there's, like, a lot of stuff that happens. How long did it take you guys to read it?
Kind of like a longer version of Cersei. But yeah. In China.
And on the moon.
Compare those two books.
Okay, similar vibes though.
It's like a coming of age, yeah. Like, and starting off powerless female character who, like, finds her power.
Yeah, it's very similar. You like more than the other.
I mean, one reads was like sort a of fortune cookie, and one reads like a Greek epic. So,
okay, well, I feel like I'm going to be the weird one here because I read it in a day.
Oh my god!
Oh my. Catherine, normally I'm not shocked. Even that surprised, but my god.
I read this on Memorial Day. So I started it in the morning and finished it by like 7 o'clock at night.
Jesus.
And I was working partly during Memorial Day. So, like, I was on and off in the book, but I was really fascinated by the story. I can see where the pacing lagged, but I actually the main character kept spurring me on. Like, I wanted to know more. I wanted to know the ending. And honestly, I was just also wanted to get it done so I could get it done for this podcast and be quote unquote ahead. So, you know, I had some outside things pushing me, but yes, I was insane and read this over 500 page book in a day. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, for me, the pacing was just okay. There's two, I think, pretty different parts of the book. One is her more so growing up and then sort of meeting the prince and being a student. And the other part is after she's no longer a student and she's a warrior whose job is to basically be a soldier. And I don't know. There are parts of the book where I feel like the romance was supposed to be the engine and the tension, and I didn't really feel it. And so during those parts, I felt like I kind of sputtered out a little bit and wasn't really sure where we were going.
Yeah. This was one of those books where some points I felt like I was reading it and not making any progress. My Kindle progress, I was like, go faster. I was struggling on this one. I don't know if it's just because of where I was or just because I have this list right now of books I want to read and none of them are the books I'm supposed to be reading for the podcast at the moment. That's summer, I feel like. There's just so many good books out. But so I was struggling, and this took me literally sitting down this last weekend for several hours over 2 days to knock out. I think I read it one more other day before that. But, like, it took me some dedicated time. Not my entire Memorial Day, but It's also 500 pages, so.
Yeah. No, it definitely took me at least a week to read this book. Okay, but would you watch a TV show or a movie of the book?
I already said that I watch these kind of TV shows anyway, so yes. I would even watch it in Chinese.
I feel like this would be a super beautiful movie. I probably wouldn't watch it for the story, but I would definitely watch it to see the world brought to life. And I'd be really curious to see how a movie would make it, you know, feel real.
I don't know that I'd watch it, but I feel like it would be good Avatar-esque, just like a long animated series of like adventures with an end purpose it takes forever to get to.
You know,
because this book does, I don't know if it's technically YA, but it reads YA.
It is YA.
Okay. It's very like wholesome, and the violence is even pretty minimal, and deaths and things. So I'm like, it could be a cute little animated like adventure. And it would, yeah, that would kind of fit the like style, I think, a little bit.
Can you imagine the cover animated into a TV series?
That's what I'm saying. It would be, that'd be really pretty.
Gorgeous.
That would take them years and years and years, but
yes. Yeah, I wish it was in production already so we'd have something to look forward to. Okay, well, we're at that time. Busy girl rating. Ultimately, how worth it is the book to read if you're busy?
I'm gonna knock down my quality rating to a 3-star because it is a very long book, and if you're not insane like me, it's probably going to take you a minute to read. But I do think it's worth it just to learn more about the Chinese mythology. Because I was having like a baseline of like pretty much no knowledge of like the mythology and the moon goddess lore. So that was kind of interesting.
I agree. I'd leave mine the same. 3. I thought it was worth it for the folklore. But honestly, like, even I think there's a lot of other authors who are now writing their like cultural folklore reimagined. And I think there's better options. Like, to me, 6 Crimson Cranes is like what this book wanted to be, but better. So, yeah, I'll probably stick with a 3.
I'll just round it out of 3 because I think there are a lot of people who really enjoy this. I had other friends who have read it on Goodreads and have given like 5 stars. So I know people like it. I probably just wasn't. I was just probably busier than I wanted to be when I was reading it and was frustrated with how fast it wasn't moving at the beginning. So that alone makes me not be able to give it a high score. But I still think there's a good audience for this book.
There we go. Okay, well, now we're going to do our spoiler alert section. So decide if you want to read the book. If you don't want to read the book, you can listen to us discuss the book so that you know about everything that happens. If you do want to read the book, don't let us spoil it. Go read it and then come back and listen to our discussion. So yeah, first question is, what do you think of the heroine? I've been pronouncing this Jingyin.
That's right.
Okay. And her moon goddess mother.
I liked the heroine because I think she's very naive, and that's pretty, I mean, like, what can you expect from a child that grows up without any children and just has her mother and a servant and that's it? And so she grows up witnessing the world but never being part of it, and then she does what children do and taps into something that she shouldn't have. And it forces her to move away, which is very realistic for what children do. It's like, if you tell them to do something, not do something, they're going to do it immediately. And I thought it was interesting watching her grow up, learn more about the world through like trial by fire, basically. She definitely can be a little too trustworthy or a little too, like, she jumps into things without thinking sometimes, like when she was like, yeah, I'm just going to join the palace and like compete to become the prince's schoolmate, but not realizing that it
was crazy. I'm sorry.
Like she not realizing it's the Empress
decision.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Not realizing the Empress would be at the palace. Like she just was like, oh, I thought it maybe would as another palace. Like, why didn't I think of that? I'm like,
that's your mom.
Yeah,
yeah, I was like, the Empress.
This was the part of the book that irritated me. Sorry.
Yeah. That was the one part where I'm like, you're dumb for not realizing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I had some more thoughts too. I think one of my biggest problems with this book, and one of the reasons I didn't rate it higher, is because I think it hits the hero trope a little too hard, where, oh, you're realizing your potential and you're going to be the reason we win every battle, and, you know, we can't do this without you. Like, you know, don't follow orders, go and like save everyone. And that whole sort of like cycle in the book, I think, just became repetitive for me, and I found it a little bit annoying. But I liked, like you mentioned this, Catherine, I liked the start of the book where it's a lot more oriented around the original folktale. And I kind of like that fairy tale-esque vibe where it's like, you know, a child makes a mistake and then there are these dire consequences. Like, that's one of my favorite like beginnings of a book ever. I like never get tired of it. So, there were things I liked about her, but she kind of grated on me by the end.
We'll say for like the hero's journey kind of thing, I much prefer this book over like the Odyssey or anything like that, because like it's a female one. And two, like, I think she has a more relatable hero's journey, even though she's like pretty fantastic at everything she does. She actually like has compassion for others and is not just like blowing through towns, blowing through people, and like not thinking about the things she kills. Like, she's even remorseful for the things she has to kill, which I think is like shows empathy and compassion. So if I'm going to have to read a hero's journey over and over and over again, I'd much prefer this over like some like Odyssey or the Iliad.
She does remind me of DM though.
A little bit. Yes.
A little bit. I don't know. At the beginning, I thought her decisions had no reason behind them. She went from being like, oh my God, I don't know what to do, I've never left home, to, well, why don't I just ask if I can go to the palace? And I was like, excuse me?
The audacity.
Yeah, and a lot of her decisions were like that. Ultimately, like, I didn't have a lot of issue with her other than she was really blind to how many men found her attractive and wanted to be with her. And I was like, girl, how many millions of years old are you or whatever? Like, you're immortal. Figure this out.
I don't think she was very old.
I know, but still, I'm like, come on, girl. Figure it out. These men like you. You're not just there as a bow and arrow. They think you're hot.
Okay, so I will say on that note, the other thing I found annoying is that, like, on the note of her decisions having no basis, is I felt like when she decided to join the army, she was just like, we'll try this. I was like, I'm sorry, do you have any reason to believe that being in the army will allow you to free your mother one day? Like, what is happening?
Well, it's like every hard decision she had to make, like whether to stay in the palace or join the army or between the two guys, she never had to make it. Like, just the situation resolved itself.
That's true. She never.
I was like, can you make a hard choice?
Yeah.
I think that's why she just didn't feel like she had as much grit as I wanted. I mean, the whole time I was reading it thinking, ah, if I hadn't read Six Crimson Cranes, maybe I would like this more.
Yeah.
And you know me, I love Six Crimson Cranes.
Yes. Yeah.
Honestly, I read this book several years ago. I don't really remember her mom that much.
Her mom's really not in it much.
I don't really remember the character.
She's at the beginning and at the very end.
Yeah.
I felt very sorry for her mom because she's so vilified for taking the immortal elixir so that she could save herself and her daughter. And then she has to watch the mortal world pass by from the sky. And her husband does end up dying and she doesn't know. And she was hoping that he would still be alive for her to see him and like apologize or talk to him.
That was the only actually sad thing in the book, despite all the craziness that should have happened, all the deaths that should have happened.
Yeah. I felt really bad for the mother because she was obviously heartbroken basically the entire time.
Yeah. This is where I feel like, because I did read up a little bit about the myth that inspired it afterwards. I feel like the mother holds pretty true in this book to the traditional lore, just kind of like a beautiful woman who's longing and looks down over the people. And it her myth does inspire the festival, the autumn festival or whatever. I don't know. There's some versions where it is that someone else was trying to steal the elixirs, so she drank it before an evil person could, and being sad apart from her husband. But there's other myths where like he is granted it but becomes like an evil tyrant of a king, so she drinks it so that he won't reign forever. Like there's different ways, but none of them are like good. Some of them it's like, you know, a parable trying to teach people like don't do whatever or you'll be imprisoned on the moon. But some of them it's just like she's a sad woman on the moon, often with a rabbit, and which did not make an appearance. But I don't know, I feel like her character held true to the myth and it really just added to the myth.
Yeah. Okay, so the other thing we've mentioned several times already is this celestial kingdom, full of these kind of like epic gods and goddesses type figures. What did you think of the world building and the powers of the immortals and their whole kind of society?
I want to say I thought it was all really beautiful and I definitely understood like the magic system. However, because the mortal world was separate from like the celestial bodies and stuff, I pictured like a floating desert and floating oceans up in the sky. And I was like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be visualizing here when they're traveling to these other parts on clouds. So I was a little lost there and my imagination was probably doing much crazier things than it needed to.
So I think you're actually kind of correct there, because a lot of the Asian dramas I watch, they're up in the sky in the heavens and they come down to the earth. So yes, there's just floating seas in the sky.
Okay, I just assume like the mortals see them as like, oh, the stars, you know. Yes. But in my head, I was like,
they're up in the clouds.
When they travel between these places.
Yeah, they are up in the clouds. It takes a bit of mind boggling.
Okay, I'm glad I felt crazy trying to. Yeah. I could not place it in my head. Not to say it wasn't like super lush and beautiful, but I also was like, am I picturing this right?
Yes, they are floating on clouds down to the mortal world. Yes.
Yeah, but like the four seas.
Those are in the clouds. Yes.
See, that's where I just maybe my brain hit a block, and maybe that's one place I feel like she could have done a little more explaining if you don't have like a K-drama background or C-drama background. I don't know. Otherwise, I loved it.
Yeah, I thought this was the book's strong suit. I think lush is the right word to describe it. I did picture them all floating around on clouds and it didn't bother me. I thought it was cool.
No, I kind of like the cloud travel.
Yeah, I was like, here we go. Here we go.
Don't you wish to float on clouds? That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
Even Glinda.
Giving Glinda.
That's a bubble.
Same. Yeah, but like, just
same idea. Same idea. So yeah, I liked the powers that everyone had. I think the only critique I have, which is kind of leading into the next question, is the main love interest and some of his family. I feel like they didn't have a ton of meaningful interactions, and so I would have liked more characters just to build out the society a little more.
Yeah, I liked, I mean, I loved the world and I loved the magic system, because I especially liked this idea of how the emperor can like just declare things out of knowledge systems and out of knowledge base. So when she's going and asking questions and people are just not answering them and being like, yeah, the emperor banned us from talking about this, has banned us from mentioning that there's this other power that controls people's minds, because that is bad. And then like she has like a very nuanced take as she like goes about like, yeah, people can use that for bad. They could also maybe use that for good. I mean, people use water powers for bad. They can,
I did like that point.
Yeah, they can wipe out entire worlds. Every power system can be bad if used by bad people. Like, if you give a bad person a weapon, they're going to use it in malicious ways. So I thought that was a very unique way of doing it. And I liked how, like, it was the elements plus of, like, spirit essence. And, like, I don't know. I just thought it was really cool. And I liked that she had, like, this wind and fire power. And then I did like that she was, like, very good at archery. Okay. So it was, like, her dad.
About the life force part of it, though. So they have, like, their powers and their life force, which, like, powers their powers.
Yeah.
And they can expend their life force if they use their powers too fast. Of course, when she gave half her life force to free the dragons, she magically recharged it real good on the moon. It's like, there were, like you said, there were no consequences for her actions.
No, yeah, that's very Asian drama-esque. Yeah.
I mean, I like, you know, the sacrificed idea and how she had to sacrifice some of her, like, magic in herself for a good purpose. Like, it played well into, like, you knew how important that was because the magic system was so well established. It's just the moon was a magic battery. So
yeah, I didn't like the magic battery of the moon. I much preferred her to be like
a lot. We all lived happily ever after. That's why I don't know why there's a second book, but
well, it's because of the romance. They're hoping to keep the love triangle going. Because they left both open-ended.
Which I hated.
Yeah, no.
I'm being kind of aggressive. I really didn't mind this book, I promise.
It's just average.
There were just a few things that, like, really ground my gears. Yeah.
The romance grated on me as well. Which, speaking of, what did you think of our main love interest, Li Wei? I think it's Li Wei.
I was saying Li Wei.
Li Wei? Yeah. Sure.
I gave the disclaimer at the beginning. I'm sorry if we mispronounce things. We are tragically very white people.
Yeah, Li Wei and his family.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Li Wei was hella boring. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was, again, one of the biggest attractors of the novel is most of it is spent on their relationship. And then there's a love triangle and some other love interests who are kind of sprinkled throughout. But that's really not until the end where there's, like, a serious kind of, like, alternate love interest. And I was just like, come on, man. Like, is she really just going to be with this boring ass guy just because he's a prince? Like, no chemistry. He was not challenging for her. I just thought he was so boring.
Very childhood love.
Yes, yeah. Like, first romance, forever romance. But I do think there's one instance, she barely touched on it, some people may not even caught it reading, that would have made him more complex if she had honed in on it. It's that he says he encouraged his dad to grant her the red lion talisman or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, I wonder if he did that thinking I would choose him, since he didn't know about her mom. And I was like, you should have played in on the part that, like, he was trying to make the love happen too and was not so passive, because he's so passive for most of the book. Passive. Just like, it's my duty.
Very familial honor and duty and less of love.
So I'm like, if you had really honed in on him, been like, I did this so we could be together, like, that's what you had to ask for. Right. And I think that would have added some drama, some flair to him. Also, there's a picture of a girl at the beginning hanging in his room that he thinks is really beautiful. I'm going to assume it was it Feng Mei? But the princess, the Phoenix princess, but it never, like, goes back to that. And I'm like, did he have another girl he had a crush on?
Phoenix kind of mentioned that he did really like a girl that used to live there, but no longer lives, but it is never mentioned again.
It kind of mentions that the Phoenix kingdom, like, left the palace. So I assume it was her. But, like, let's circle back to that. Is he really that mad about having to marry this girl if he has a painting of her in his room?
I thought that the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's just like, oh, I wish I could have both.
And in theory, he could, because concubines are still a thing.
That's the one time Xing Yan puts her foot down.
Yeah, I mean, like, fair. I wouldn't want that either. But it was interesting because, like, I found him very vanilla, white toast, milk toast vibes, mm-hmm. and very passive soft boy that doesn't want to do anything. I was surprised when he actually joined in on like quests and stuff, because I'm like, oh, you actually do things? You do action? Didn't know that. And then I actually liked the other guy better, even though I knew he was probably going to end up being bad. But I
liked the other guy better too. Yes.
Oddly, I kind of thought it was going to be the prince was not the good guy. So she got me there, honestly. I did like the other guy.
Yeah.
I still kind of like the other guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, leaves it open-ended where it's like, is he a bad guy or is he just like selfish and really just was like out for himself and didn't expect to fall in love?
Right.
I think he's still a bad guy, but bad people can be nuanced.
That's true. That's true.
We're reading way too many adult novels.
I mean, also, like, one of you mentioned it. This was her debut novel. So, like, okay, maybe the second one will have a little bit more teeth when it comes to the romance. I don't know.
Okay, I'm trying to find a quote. Because despite my, like, very, like, milquetoast feelings about this book and this romance, there was one quote in this book that was so good, and I think about it all the time, but I don't think I'm going to be able to find it.
If you think about it all the time, why don't you just know it?
Well, I know, like, the general gist, so I'll just say it, but I was hoping to find the, like, literal words. But I think it's the general guy, and he tells her, like, why would a hawk want to look like a dove, basically?
Yes.
I think it's, yeah, the other love interest.
Why would a falcon want to look like a dove or something like
why
that?
Why would a falcon want to look like a dove?
I think it's Winsy who says it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I liked him. And I was like, that is just so beautiful. Like, the way it was put in the book just, like, really hit me. And I was like,
because wasn't it when she was, like, done up to mimic
the governess?
The governess for the prince. Yeah.
By the way, that was, like, the cutest scene in the whole book.
Yeah. Yes.
That was my favorite little action plot thing. I was like, okay, this is a battle scene I can vibe with. Like, this is giving epic fantasy, but
right.
I don't know. It was just, like, a lot of little pops of action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked meeting, like, the sea people and the mer people.
Yeah, that was a cool. Yeah. All the worlds were really vibrant, and that one especially was really cool.
But I we went back there and revisited the prince, and then that was, like, because they were the dragons. They were the pro-dragon people, and they wanted a way to release them. And
they did. I love that scene also, like, gently introduced the mind magic thing before she went all the way in on it in the cloud wall.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. I thought that was actually really clever plotting.
I did,
everything too. About the, like, Sea Kingdom I was a fan of.
The exploring I thought was really well done. For me, I felt like the battles got repetitive and weren't super distinct.
Because it was a whole lot of little ones.
Right. Like, tiny spurts of them.
But there was, like, you're like, why do I care that she's having to kill this monster she's sad about taking a life? But then you're like, oh, we're there because she has to find the bow and Winsy's taking the iron or whatever from the mountain. Like, you don't realize it until the end.
Right.
But it did feel repetitive. I see how she was trying to, like, plant the little eggs, though.
Right. And then as far as the emperor and empress, I liked them as ideas. I didn't think they were totally pulled off.
They weren't fleshed out.
Yeah, I just think we needed more from them to enjoy them. Because I love a temperamental ruler. Like, I love a diva king, for sure. But I didn't feel like there was enough there to really get it.
Well, and I like the idea that the archer was the one who killed the family of the empress, so she already has a vendetta against the moon
god. That was good. It was the celestial emperor who I was like, why do we care what he thinks? I thought the villain was the empress, because she shows up on the moon and then he's kind of passive the whole time until he, like, electrocutes her, and I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, he's kind of,
he needed more of a backstory other than being, like, the end all be all of all decisions. I think it would have been more fun if he was, like, spineless and the wife was running everything.
Yeah, like, manipulated.
Yeah.
True. Okay. So we've also mentioned this a little bit, but What did you think of Jing Yin's choice to become a soldier after Li Wei is betrothed? All I can say is I wanted to punch him in the face during this part of the book because he's such a whiny little bitch.
I will also once again say she didn't actually make a choice. It was made for her.
Yeah, made for her. Yep.
Well, I mean, she chose him just to leave.
Yeah, I liked the commander and I loved
the commander.
However you say her name, like her little girl boss friend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, go with them. They're more fun anyway.
Yeah. And like, yeah, the commander was basically her like mentor.
Yeah.
He was the father figure that she needed. And
it's not like she willy nilly joined the army. She like knew the people, knew the purpose and had an end goal without, of course, she magically like got to just be her, choose her own battles or whatever. But
yeah, I was like, okay.
Honestly, it made sense to me. It was interesting, but it got really drawn out.
I mean, I want her negotiation skills because, you know.
What negotiation? She just says, so can I have like my own choices and no rank? And they're like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. I want that negotiation skills where people disagree with me.
Yeah, it was insane to me. That's part where I was like, okay.
Like, no pushback. Okay, sure. Right.
The military, famously hierarchical and built on rules, is just like,
he's gonna let you go, willy
nilly. I'm like, this is based off like Chinese military. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
They wouldn't just let that happen. No.
Right.
Like, they take a lot of purpose in their martial arts and military arts.
Yes. And I will say she was trained for it. So it wasn't just like out of nowhere.
Right.
But I do think that like, they gave her so much grace and so much leeway to do whatever she wanted to do.
They also never explained why the dragon bow chose her.
Yeah, I'm guessing that.
I'm guessing she's like pure apart or whatever.
I'm guessing it might be book two. My theory was it was her father's bow. And he was the last person to hold the bow.
But he wasn't magic. And he, like, I don't know. But I feel like the person who, like, contained their life forces in a pearl was magic because they had to give part of their life force. Or maybe that's how he died. Maybe that's what we'll find out.
So I don't know if her father was that person, but, like, maybe the person after that, like, the bow chose another person. I don't know. That was kind of what I was thinking.
It would be interesting if that's how he died, was, like, saving the dragons.
That's true. Yes.
Giving his life to help them.
He may just be mortal, though. But they kind of alluded that he was mortal, but with enhancements, because apparently he had some things that were helping him.
Someone, something was helping him.
Yeah.
I know. What if he's not actually dead?
That'd be crazy.
And it's not a tombstone. It's just a, like, place to. I think he won't be dead. That's my personal. He's somehow immortal. I don't know. I kind of thought he was going to peer the whole time when the silver archer was in the woods. I thought that was him.
Yeah.
It was just Wednesday. I was like, ah, dang.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's talk about Mr. Wednesday, who we all preferred to Li Wei. However, he ended up being the villain of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of did expect it. But I honestly feel like he's still not that bad of a guy, like, in a weird way.
He just hated his sadistic brother.
Right. Like, yeah. I know that they, like, capture her and hold her captive. And, like, obviously that's objectively bad. But
also, random dark thing where the brother tries to, like, rape her, maybe.
Yeah. I was like, whoa. Okay. Yeah.
I was like, this was YA. We didn't need to throw that in. We're good.
Exactly. I was like, there's very little violence except for this one scene, which is extremely scary.
Yes.
Where he's paralyzed and he's going to kill his brother. And then he's like, maybe going to steal hers. Like, okay.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Because to me, I think Wenzi, I liked his character the most out of everyone, just because I felt like he was the only character that had truly complicated motivations. Like, you can see how his people were, like, deeply wronged and experienced prejudice, and they're in their fight to do that. They morphed into villains, and obviously he, like, wanted to own her, and, like, that's wrong. But also, it was also, like, I don't know, he was just so much more interesting than everyone else that it was hard for me not to root for him.
Well, and he was going to give up on his quest, and he asked her to come with him, even if he couldn't get to his quest. It just so happened that she aligned with his quest and he needed those dragon pearls, and like the fates would have it, she would be the reason to get them. But he was going to give up the quest and he invited her with him. So I think he honestly genuinely loved her, but like she can't physically love him if she doesn't know who he is, which makes it hard.
I think it could have complicated things better if he just was like swipe or no swipe and took the pearls, you know, and was like, see ya, I lied, I need these. And then she's not a prisoner to be his like captive wife or whatever. Yeah. And then maybe she goes to try and get them back and they argue about like, I need this for this, but I need this for my mom. Like that would, I feel like, leave it where the love story could be open-ended. But I feel like kidnapping her and imprisoning her and saying you're not leaving no matter your choice was a step too far. Like, I don't see how that's repairable.
Yeah. That was the point where it was too far.
He like took her freedom, like her mom's freedom was taken on the moon. So like he should have known that was her trigger. And I don't see how they could ever rekindle that.
I feel like and I haven't read the second book, so I don't know. I feel like he'll be more of a foil to Liwei and their love story, and less so like actually potential suitor. But I think he speaks a lot more truth to her, and is
that he knows her better. I feel like even though she spent so much time with Liwei, because they're both warriors, but I think what he did capturing her and taking away her one goal and instead imprisoning her like her mother was unforgivable.
100%. And I think she would have gone with him willingly, even if he was a demon, because she was already questioning the emperor's like logic and like saying like, why do we call them demons if they look exactly like us? All that's different from them is like their eyes and like their powers. Mm-hmm. She was already saying like, the emperor's already a bad guy. They've imprisoned my mother. So why?
Yeah, she's like, I don't like either side.
Why are these the good guys? Why are these the bad guys? I see just bad guys on both sides.
I do also like the little point about they're only called demons because like the ruler started calling them that and we perceive them that way, but they're actually like nice people. I'm like, wow, that's a life lesson in general. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, you're right. I think if he had just explained it, but they have this whole argument about like, she's like, why didn't you tell me who you were? And he's like, I didn't know who you were. And she's like, I didn't lie. I just never told the truth. You lied. So I don't know. There's a lot of nuance there because they both were doing the same thing. But his intentions,
well, he was
more selfish.
Yeah, he was lying about his whole self, though.
Right.
She was lying about her parentage.
Well, she never really lied. She just let people believe they were dead. So,
Like, she was still being herself. Nothing about her changed. She was just not saying who her parents were.
Right.
Literally changed himself.
He, like, disguised his eyes and stuff and was,
quite literally a spy.
So there's like a gray area of like they're doing similar things, but they're doing it differently.
Right.
I don't know. It was very complicated. Right. That was probably the most complicated thing in the whole book, was their relationship. And
of
their
course,
decisions.
We liked the morally gray guy better than
the villain. I'm going to pick the shadow daddy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But I stand by, like, again, obviously I agree. He crossed the line and went too far and like veered too far in the villain to be redeemable.
Yeah.
But it's
not
hard
that not I like
to
Liwei any better, but
right I hope she ends up with neither of them. But I also like, I agree, like it did feel like he just knew her better, and so you like him more because their relationship feels more authentic. Like with Liwei, sometimes it's like, I honestly don't really know what you guys have in common.
He feels like a childhood friend that she can't let go of.
Okay, so what did you guys think of the dragons in the book? There's also a bunch of quests and battles. And we've already kind of touched on some of Jingyan's questionable choices.
I was very excited because we have read a couple like East Asian based, kind of myth based books. So whenever the king was like, I want the dragon's pearls, I was like, no, they need their pearls. Like, I knew that. I was so proud of myself. Thank you guys. We've been reading a good variety of books. And they were exactly like you see them in the other books, like the dragons, well described. And those would be really cool come to life if there ever was like an animated series or movie or something.
Thank you, Six Crimson, yes, for the dragon's pearls.
Yeah.
I knew all about it. I was so ready. And I knew, like, also, Priory of the Orange Tree had a lot of dragons that were very traditional.
Hell yeah. Okay. So what about the ending? Most of the stuff that's introduced in book one is resolved, but there's like a little bit of unresolved questions with the romance. We're not sure what our main character chooses, if she chooses to be with any of them, how she ends up feeling about the men in the book. Did it make you guys want to read book two?
Well, it just kind of ends with her on the moon with her mother, and they're deciding where to go next, I guess.
Yeah. And
seeing her dad's grave, and then basically, like, it just sprinkles in nuggets that, like, her friends are visiting her, but Li Wei is the one that's visiting her the most.
While she magically recharges her battery.
Yes.
A little much. I do think there are other things unresolved. Like, I don't really get how the Phoenix Kingdom is just like, oh, well, you can break off the betrothment. Like, we can still be friends. I'm like, that seems not.
Well, because, like, it would make sense for, like, the woman to be like, yeah, I don't want you if you're, like, in love with someone else. But
they were, like, both doing it for duty, too.
Yeah, that so was, it's like, that's two kingdoms' betrothal agreements. That's more complicated than just let's not get married.
Right. So I feel like there's some issues there and some looming issues from the emperor, empress, probably.
Yes.
I don't know, though. Like, it left, like I said earlier, it left it off at a well-wrapped up enough place that it's not top of my list to read next.
No, I don't think I'll read it anytime soon. Maybe I'll pick it up again if I'm very interested in learning more. But for right now, I've got way too many books to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I read this book in like 2022, so I'm obviously not going to read the sequel.
You've had all these years. Just came out, I'm pretty sure. But
oh, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I couldn't have read it until recently, but, you know, I'm all right.
Which makes me think, how long is that one if she took that long to write the next?
I don't know. So she did come out with a few other books that I think are in the same universe. But honestly, I'm not 100% sure.
See, that almost intrigues me more. Just more in the Celestial universe would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the other books are in the Celestial Kingdom. And they have book two, which came out in 2022.
Wait, what?
Oh, came out the same year.
I thought it just came out.
No, that's a book 2.5.
Oh.
That's in the same universe.
No, I hate that. I hate 0.5s. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So she had finished both books that same year.
Okay.
Okay, that makes more sense.
That means she had an arc in mind, which is slightly more intriguing.
So one was published 2025, and it's in the same world, but with different characters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well,
we'll see. I'm not sure any of us will be picking those up, but do you have book recommendations?
I'm going to get ahead.
Six Crimson and Cranes.
No! Yeah, I wanted to say Six Crimson Cranes.
So we all say Six Crimson Cranes.
I mean, that's the obvious choice.
It is such a good little myth retelling. And that character just has a little more oomph.
I think also, stepping outside of Chinese mythology, Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies, kind of similar cozy vibes.
Yeah, I think that's all I've got. I'm looking at my list to see if there's anything else that jumps out at me. Oh, you know, actually what I'm going to recommend is a book we're about to review that I actually felt similarly about. I liked and didn't love it, but it's North is the Night,
are ahead on the books right now.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Which is Emily Rath's new sort of fantasy book, but it's built off of Finnish folklore, and the folklore themes and like storylines in the book are really strong. And so I think if you're looking for more kind of like folklore, fairy tale-ish inspired stuff. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. We've read a lot of those. So I feel like if you go back to our episodes, you know, we mentioned Circe. I feel like you've got A Fate Inked in Blood, you know, that's kind of Nordic. You've got some other fun ones that we've done. We really love a myth retelling on the pod. And you guys love it because that's why the books are popular. So
we're all Percy Jackson girlies at heart.
Yes. Yeah, this was giving Sea of Monsters.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So these are just our opinions. This was a listener recommendation, by the way. So
I always forget to look up who sent these. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
This was a request in our DM specifically because they wanted to hear Casey's thoughts on the book.
Oh, I actually did not remember that
part. It was a list of like three books and we're like, I'd love to hear Casey's thoughts on any of these. I think they thought you were going to hate it.
I didn't hate it. I did think the romance was pretty weak though. They saved saved herself with the world building.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, these are just our opinions. I hope you're satisfied, dear listener, with our kind of collective mediocre response to this book. And you guys should submit your own book so that you can hear us have a response to anything else that you're reading.
Oh, okay. Okay. This is Madeline. Thank you, Madeline.
Thank you, Madeline.
I like your profile picture of you kissing your cat.
Thanks, Madeline.
Doxing.
Be like Madeline and slide into our DMs at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. Rate and review our podcast. And yeah.
Yeah. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.